Hello and welcome to the CEDEFOP podcast Skillset and Match. I'm Rosie Bouduri and I'm delighted to have in the CEDEFOP studio with me European Commission Vice President for Promoting Our European Way of Life, Margaritis Hinas, to talk about the European Year of Skills, which starts today. Mr. Hinas has served in the European institutions for many years in various capacities, including as an MEP, Deputy Director General of DG Communication and Chief Spokesperson of the Commission. Few people know the institutions and Europe's aspirations, problems and required solutions as well as he does. His portfolio includes, among others, the coordination of the European Skills Agenda, making education more accessible and inclusive, encouraging lifelong learning, reskilling and cross-border learning. That makes him the perfect guest for a discussion on the European Year of Skills. The year was announced in Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's State of the Union speech last September. And now, a few months later, it's becoming a reality. Its activities are meant to help people get the right skills for quality jobs and companies, in particular small and medium enterprises, to address skill shortages in the EU. The initiative will showcase skills development opportunities across Europe, promote easier recognition of qualifications across borders, bring organizations and people together to share their experiences and insights, and set out how EU initiatives and funding can help. CEDEFOP, as the EU's agency for skills, is a partner of the European Year of Skills. And together with Mr. Hinas, we'll see what all this means to the European citizens. Mr. Vice President, welcome to CEDEFOP and thank you for making the time to give our listeners your take on skills and what they mean to Europe.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with CEDEFOP. First of all, on such a landmark day like today, where we're launching the European Year of Skills 2023 with a major event, which is of pan-European scale. We'll be connecting from the Athens festivities hub. But also it's a pleasure because we are registering this at CEDEFOP headquarters in my beloved Thessaloniki. So I'm delighted on both accounts to be with you.
Thessaloniki being your hometown.
Absolutely.
So let's start with the obvious. Why a European Year of Skills?
Well, the answer, I think, is pretty obvious. Last year, we had the European Year for Youth. This year, we have the European Year for Skills. It's not an accident. It's not a coincidence that we are focusing on two areas that are vitally important for society and for the economy. Young Europeans have lost many opportunities as a result of the pandemic, and we have to give them back opportunities in education, training, in mobility, in the job market. Same thing for skills. There is no doubt that we are facing an acute skills shortage in the European Union. We do not have the people we need in certain key areas, and in many areas, we do have people in employment, but clearly not at the level that the technology and the twin transition dictates. So the European Year of Skills is a fantastic opportunity to address this mismatch, this asymmetry, draw visibility, create a pan-European awareness, and of course, make sure that both industry, stakeholders, providers, trainers and learners are aware of the many opportunities that the EU can offer in this area.
Mm-hmm. As you said, there are various areas where Europe needs to do better to remain competitive and offer good job opportunities to its citizens. One of them is what we call upskilling and reskilling, and you touched on that. That is helping people get new skills necessary to do their jobs or to change employment. And this is a main focus for the European Year of Skills. How does the EU compare to its main global competitors when it comes to utilizing skills, upskilling, reskilling as part of maintaining competitiveness?
Well, I don't think that there is a black and white answer to this question. Clearly, we're not alone in the world and we are competing in the global market for competitiveness, for skills. I'm reasonably convinced that the Europe is doing better in the area of high-skilled individuals. According to data, six out of the most high-skilled countries globally are located in the EU. That's a good sign, but not enough. Because being good at the high end of the skill spectrum does not address the very important issue of skill shortaging at the lower part of the ladder. What is urgent now, and this is what we need to do, is to focus on the skills required for the twin transition, for green and digital. These are areas where we need to do much better, not least because we have the resources, we have the money, we have the EU legislation to underpin these transitions, but we do not have the people. We need digital workers. We need more than 400,000 digital workers, and we don't have them. And we need also environmental engineers. We need experts in green buildings. We need experts in alternative energy sources. So this is where we should be concentrating in the years to come.
Exactly, that was my next question, but skills shortages across occupations and countries was a big problem. As SEDEFOP's research also shows, what do you think is the best way to go about solving this problem?
Since we started working in this commission with my colleague Nico Schmidt on skills, we started with the updated EU skills agenda, where we set the framework and we set very clear targets for upskilling and reskilling. Ambitious targets, but doable, pragmatic, realistic targets. This is something that focuses governments' minds on the need to have a sustained investment drive on skills. Then we have unprecedented EU resources, funds for skills. One third of the European Social Fund, around 30 billion euros, will be dedicated to skills development in the current framework. And on top of that, we now have this new super weapon of the Recovery and Resilience Fund, where all the national plans, all national RRF plans, have a substantial part on skills developing, fully funded. And to that, we also have to add other projects like Creative Europe, Erasmus Plus, that they also have their training components. So never before in the history of the EU we had so much money, the political will, and the need to match those two with labor market needs. Europe needs a skills revolution. And my belief is that for this to succeed, it has to be an organized revolution. And for the first time, it can be, because all component parts are there.
What about third country nationals? How can they help European economies grow?
We are facing a dramatic demographic crisis. Europeans, we represented 20% of the world population at the beginning of last century. We're 10% of the world population at the beginning of this century, and will be 5% by 2050. These figures are compelling, and the natural reason, you can choose the word you like, to move to some sort of organized labor migration scheme. We have very successful pilot projects on organized labor mobility with certain North Africa countries, but now we have to scale them up, move towards a new dimension. We call it skills partnerships and talent pools, which is organized schemes for matching the needs of the European job market with the available offer of specialists from these neighboring countries. This is a process which has started. It would require some adjustments that we will address later this year, namely a system for the recognition of third country nationals' qualifications. That's also important. And some minor adjustments to our regulatory framework. But it will have to be done. And it's a nice component part of everything we're trying to do under the European Year of Skills.
This initiative, of course, will go some way to helping the issue of skill shortages. However, at the same time, in many countries, Greece being one of them, we have high unemployment. And that, according to our research, is also because the quality of jobs, the quality of employment offered is not as good as it should be. How can we address this problem?
Well, I think that overall, across the European Union, unemployment rates are falling. But you're rightly pointing out that this is not enough in itself, because we need better jobs and better paid jobs. And numbers do not always tell us the full story. For that, I think the broader RRF process will be important. And this was precisely why this new fund for recovery and resilience was designed in the first place, to complement our work under the structural funds, under the cohesion funds, with something more dynamic, something that serves the requirements of the new economy, that invests not only on highways, bridges, and farmers, but on the green transition, technology, on human capital. And I think now that we are moving into full synchronization of these national RRF plans, there will be undoubtedly a positive effect on employment. We are starting to notice it, but we have to give it some time. But I'm very optimistic that it will work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned technology and the digital transition. A lot of people are afraid of digitalization and of some horror stories coming out about artificial intelligence replacing the need for people in many jobs. How can you make people feel more confident that they have the support they need to transition to a new kind of employment if required, or getting the new skills they need to do the job?
The digital transition of the European Union is happening. It's not an abstract, blurred objective of something to come. It's happening already. And as I was telling you earlier, it is supported by a very modern regulatory framework. We are supporting it with lots of new ideas on cybersecurity, on the EU cybersecurity academies, on building, injecting more skills into the digital system. So the transition is happening, and the early signs of the transition do not point out to a situation that this transition is happening at the expense of employment. I would say that reality does not corroborate this perception. Where I do think we need to be extra careful, because this is a very new dynamic and to a certain extent unknown territory of the digital transition, is of course artificial intelligence. There, in the area of artificial intelligence, Europe needs to find the answers to the questions that have not been replied to in the US and will never be asked in China. We have to come with a European way of managing artificial intelligence. And the only way to do it is to do it with a full anthropocentric control of AI at the start and at the end of the AI process. Algorithms should not be left at the hands of software engineers. And the algorithms cannot evolve without anthropocentric control. We need to get this right, and we will. And by doing it, clearly the impact on employment will be positive. We will not surrender our lives to algorithms, not to software engineers. Society and the people need to be in charge of AI.
Now, CEDEFOP's work is largely around skills in all their forms, and especially vocational. How does the Commission see CEDEFOP's role in this effort to promote skills?
As you know, Rosie, I've been following CEDEFOP for many years in my previous lives as an EU official. I was also very supportive to the agency during my MEP years. It's an agency that is located to my hometown, Thessaloniki. So I'm very sensitive on CEDEFOP work. And I'm delighted that this European Year for Skills will inevitably put CEDEFOP again in the agenda and in the focus, and that's a good thing. CEDEFOP has been developing not only as a hub for vocational training and analysis, forecast, and showing us the trend or anticipating the trends that we policymakers need to address with action. That's the main asset of CEDEFOP. But I'm delighted to see that in the recent years, CEDEFOP has, in a way, transcended beyond the classical boundaries of VET into a more operational, I would say, mode of addressing training and education. That's a very positive development. CEDEFOP is the oldest of our EU agencies. There is a huge potential to offer much more added value. And again, I'm finishing as I started. The European Year of Skills is a fantastic opportunity for CEDEFOP to find itself at the heart of the social policy agenda.
You said at a recent conference that the European Year of Skills cannot be a year of discussions, nor a year of Brussels for Brussels' sake. How are you planning to achieve this?
Yes, in the many preparatory meetings we had with the president and my fellow commissioners, but also stakeholders, I said that the European year should have a couple of innovative elements to become a resounding success. The first of which is to de-Brusselize the European year. I think the area of skills development in itself requires debate out of Brussels, a bit the one we're doing together today, the launch we're having today of the year in four European capitals, and an extensive program of conferences and awareness-raising events across the European Union in the rest of the year. I think this is important. Equally important is that skills development does not become an issue only for the few, only for the specialists, or only for those who are well connected to VET institutions and training centers, who live in urban cities close to universities. These people have many opportunities. The European year should be an occasion also to address the ones who are on the outside, that live in mountainous, remote areas, that do not have easy access to training. These are the people that should be part of the European revolution of skills I was talking earlier. So the revolution has to be, of course, innovative, but it also has to be inclusive. So I really hope that taking the year out of Brussels, taking the year out of the usual suspects would help immensely with the year's success. And I will be personally working to achieve that.
And for that, you also need the help of the people who are on the ground, not only the people, as you said, in the cities, but I don't know, like Europe Direct centers in various places around Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of the de-Brusselization process we're discussing is precisely that this should become the ownership of all the structures that we're having on the ground. Not only info points or representations in the member states, Europe Direct centers, but also the many local stakeholders, providers, and learners that have been consistently involved in skills development work on the ground. And we have many, many, not only the universities, but also in social partners, even businesses. There are so many good examples of upskilling and reskilling out there. We have to bring all this together, make it part of this awareness that the year will inevitably introduce into the system, and then force Brussels to learn more about these many local projects. That's the way.
I ask this question because the Commission has been accused in the past that it was removed from the needs of citizens. The activities of the European Year of Skills are positively geared towards citizens of all ages in all EU countries and beyond, as you said. Do you believe that it will succeed in getting closer to people and satisfying their education and employment needs?
Well, we are on launch day, and I don't think that on the day we're launching this year, we're having lots of work ahead, one can can prejudge the final outcome. But exactly as happened with the European Year for Youth, a European Year is also always an opportunity to do much more and much better. This was the case in all European years of the past. Given the acute, the urgency of skill shortages in Europe, I have no doubt in my mind that the European Year will be hugely beneficial to improve the overall situation. I really am.
You said earlier that there is money to be spent on skills. But how can you convince businesses, especially the small and medium ones, who lack the financial resources to invest in training their employees?
That's relatively easy, because part of the reluctance was traditionally the lack of resources and the lack of practical ways of obtaining upskilling and reskilling through organized processes. Not only we have the money, we never had so much money for skills in the European Union. So this is in itself an incentive. And I think that the RRF, the national RRF plans, are also a fantastic opportunity for SMEs to be involved, contrary to what was reported that the whole RRF projects mainly concern the big companies. That's not true at all. Most of the RRF national plans have national coordinators that link to SMEs, to chambers of commerce. So any company that would seriously like to get involved in improving skills would have a very realistic, very practical opportunity to do so.
Are all member states buying into this? The companies are at a certain level, but above them are the governments, the policymakers. What about them?
I haven't seen anything to point to the contrary. I know reasonably well the political situation in our member states. I think if you would ask me to name an issue where there is unanimous cross-border and cross-party consensus on the need to do more and to do it better, it's skills development. So no, I don't foresee any resistance at the government's level either. I do see a certain difficulty or complexity of bringing together the different strands of skills development, the RRF, structural funds, other possibilities, but that's a nice problem to have.
Now, moving on to the European Skills Agenda, which is part of your portfolio. The latest version was launched in 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic, and it promised to strengthen sustainable competitiveness, to ensure social fairness with access to education, training, and lifelong learning for everybody, everywhere in the EU, and to build resilience to react to crises, of which we have had a few in the past few years. So halfway through the five-year plan, what has been achieved, do you think?
I think, as we said at the time with Nico Schmidt, that the updated skills agenda is a dynamic, a living document, a living process. It's not something that is static or that will produce effects on the moment it has been announced or presented. The agenda led to a subsequent negotiation with six industrial ecosystems, organized by my colleagues Thierry Breton and Nico Schmidt, that's led to the so-called Pact for Skills. And this Pact for Skills has now more than 1,000 members, big companies, and has already produced over 6 million pledges for upskilling and reskilling. So that is a fantastic development, and this is probably the best answer to the sort of process that the agenda, the updated skills agenda, triggered. This is working, but it's not enough. We need to do better, but it is a fantastic start.
And these are impressive numbers. What would you say to the European citizens listening about their skilling and employment prospects?
Yes, I would repeat what I just said, that regulators, EU and national, are fully aware of the need to address the skills mismatch in Europe. We should not spend too many words on it. What we now need is to switch from diagnostics to prescription, from analysis to action. And this is precisely the moment that we find ourselves today, the day of the launch of the European Year. again, we have the political will, we have the regulatory framework, we have unprecedented EU resources, and we are now building the necessary awareness and synergies at all levels to make this work. It will not be a dramatic, apocalyptic improvement in a year, but it will certainly trigger a process that will make our job markets more competitive and our society more cohesive.
So let's wish a happy and fruitful European Year of Skills to everybody. Vice President Schinas, thank you very much for joining us today at the SEDEFOP studio in Thessaloniki.
Thank you for having me. And I'm sure that we will find another opportunity towards the end of the European year to recap and assess whether everything that we discussed today will be corroborated by the course of events. I'm sure it will.
This is a pledge that you'll join us again in a year's time here to see what happened. Thank you very much again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
We'll be back with more on vocational education and training, skills and qualifications. Until then, you can visit our website, sedefop.europa.eu, for the latest developments, including a section dedicated to the European Year of Skills. You can also find our podcasts there and on all major podcast platforms. And you can follow us on social media. Goodbye.